Hey guys, welcome to another episode of True Crimes and Weird Times. I'm Kim.
I'm Ashley.
And today I'm going to be telling you about the disappearance of Justin Gaines, an 18-year-old who disappeared from a bar in Georgia. Despite there being around 3,000 people at the bar, no one seems to have witnessed anything.
And I'm going to be telling you all about one of the most famous and one of my favorite cryptids of all time, Mothman.
In November of 2007, Justin Gaines was 18 years old. He was a college freshman at the Oconee campus of Gainesville College, which is now the University of North Georgia.
Okay.
Justin was one of seven children between his mother, Erica Wilson, and his stepfather, Steve Wilson. Justin had grown up in Snellville, Georgia, but was currently living about an hour away in Athens while attending college. Now, Justin was making good grades in college. He'd become pretty popular with his classmates, but he was also kind of known as a partier too, because Justin had, you know, two different fake IDs he would use to buy alcohol.
That kind of just comes with the territory of being a college student too, though.
Oh, absolutely. No judgment here. I mean, kids are going to drink in college. That's right. Just what they do. On November 2nd, 2007, Justin decided to head to Wild Bill's in Duluth. Now, Wild Bill's was and is a nightclub or a bar, and that day was known as Thirsty Thursday.
Nice.
Which was pretty popular. I think they probably had cheaper drinks. They had younger people come in because you could get in at 18. You just couldn't drink until you were 21.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So Justin decided, hey, I'm going to go out to the bar tonight. I mean, he was going to go on his own. He's going to make some friends, have some fun, and then he'd find a ride home later that night was his plan.
So he was at least being responsible.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't going to drive himself home.
Right.
Now, there is surveillance footage of Justin at Wild Bill's. He's seen on surveillance footage going inside Wild Bill's at 11:38 p.m. Throughout the night, Justin is seen wearing a diamond stud earring and kind of like showing off his cash for people.
Ooh, yeah.
Which, I get it, 18-year-olds, he wants people to like him and think he's something big. That's how you are as a teenager. But, I mean, you're in the middle of Atlanta flashing your cash around to everybody.
Exactly. That's not a great idea.
Yeah, maybe don't do that. Now, Wild Bill's was a huge venue, and they could hold close to 5,000 people.
Oh, my God.
On this particular night, there were about 3,000 people in the nightclub.
Ugh, that's a whole lot of people.
I know, it gives me claustrophobia just thinking about it.
Exactly.
Now, Justin stayed at the club until closing, which was around 1:30 a.m., at this point, Justin is seen on camera making phone calls in the lobby, trying to find a ride home.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, none of his friends he called or texted were willing or able to come and get him.
Okay.
Now, from the club, he was only about 30 minutes from his mother's home in Snellville, but he never called his parents. Most likely, he was worried that he was going to call his mom. He's only 18. He's kind of drunk. He's going to get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Around 2 a.m., Justin stopped calling for rides, and he left the nightclub.
Like on foot, obviously?
We don't really know.
Okay.
We don't see him on surveillance footage leaving the nightclub. We just know that he left.
Oh, okay, okay.
But Justin never made it back home that night.
Mm.
Justin wasn't the type of kid to call home every day. I mean, he's fresh off in college. He's learning to be independent.
Right.
So when his mom didn't hear from him on Friday, she wasn't too worried. But Saturday comes and goes, and she still doesn't hear from him. And then Sunday, still nothing.
Ugh.
At this point, Justin's mother was just frantic, and that's when she goes to police to report him missing. Investigators spring into action pretty quickly, And the first thing they do is check his cell phone records to try and track him down with that.
Okay, yeah.
But the last location it showed was in that same area of Wild Bill's. And no calls or texts went out after 2 a.m. that night.
Oh.
And that means Justin had already been missing for 3 days before he was reported missing.
Yeah.
And we all know in a missing persons case, those first few days are crucial to the investigation and hoping to find somebody.
Right.
Which it wasn't his mother's fault. I mean, she couldn't
have known. Well, no. Yeah. I mean, especially if he didn't call home every day. I mean, that's not on her.
Right. But the time was still gone.
Right.
Police began interviewing Justin's friends and his acquaintances, but some of them were very uncooperative and didn't really want to talk to the police.
No.
They were most likely kind of worried that they themselves would get into trouble for underage drinking and, you know, whatever else was going on.
Right, yeah.
And at this point, police just kind of hit a dead end. They say they have no evidence of foul play. They have no further leads, and there's not much else that they can do.
Jeez.
So 2 weeks after Justin's disappearance, members of a nonprofit group called Texas EcuSearch launched this massive search effort. They brought in ATVs and horses and helicopters. I mean, they brought in the big guns.
Wow.
They also put it out there that they needed volunteers to come and help in the search. But unfortunately, only 27 people showed up to help.
Oh, wow. I wonder why that is. Like, I mean, you hear people go missing and like hundreds of people go out at times. It's just...
I know. It kind of blew my mind that it was such a small number.
I mean, not that that's anything sinister. It's just, that's just a really low number.
Now, the search lasted for 3 days and it turned up nothing.
Hmm.
But Justin's friends and family were not ready to give up yet. So they hired a private investigator and they started their own nonprofit to pay for billboards and flyers and other search material.
Okay.
And every Thursday night, they would go and put leaflets about Justin onto the cars at Wild Bill's, hoping that someone saw what happened to Justin that night.
Oh, that's smart. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
I know, it's genius. But even still, somehow, despite there being over 3,000 people there that night, no one saw anything. It's like he just disappeared into thin air.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, this is a nightclub. A lot of those people, I'm sure, were drunk or not paying attention or doing other things.
Absolutely. Especially if they were drunk. I mean, what are the chances? Even if they did see something, they would remember it.
Right. Exactly.
3 months after the disappearance, police say that they have had several leads at this point that they were working, and those leads seem to indicate foul play, which was something everyone suspected, but no one really wanted to believe.
Yeah.
Justin's mother made searching for him her full-time job. They, like, converted the garage into an office.
Oh, wow.
And she spent all her time, you know, putting up flyers and dedicating all her spare time to search for her son. Erica and her husband believed that Justin had probably been offered a ride from someone and had later been killed by that person. But she still held on to the hope that maybe she was wrong and maybe he was still going to come home one day. But months quickly turned into years, and Justin's case eventually went cold.
Mm.
Every few years, police would plead with the public for new tips or any information they may have, and they would get a few in here and there, but nothing ever panned out.
That's frustrating.
Until the fall of 2015, when the case suddenly had what seemed to be a huge break.
Oh.
8 years after Justin disappeared, police issue an arrest warrant for a man named Martin Wilkie for helping to conceal the death of Justin Gaines.
Oh.
Police had gotten a tip from a woman named Thelma Ballew. She was 51 years old, and she'd been in trouble with the law before, as had her son, Dylan Glass. Dylan was 28 years old, and at this point in time, in 2015, he was already in prison on other charges.
Ah.
Thelma claimed that her son, Dylan, and Martin Wilkie had assaulted Justin and shot him.
Wow.
She said that they then dumped his body in Lake Lanier off the marina.
Of course it's Lake Lanier. That's another story for another time.
Yeah. But they dumped his body in Lake Lanier off the marina because a friend of theirs had a houseboat there.
Ah, okay.
However, they were nervous about, you know, the body being found. So they kind of kept an eye on it and they were checking on the body every day. And a few days after they dumped the body, it floated back to the surface.
Hmm.
According to Thelma, the two men then retrieved the body, put it into a black toolbox, and then dumped it again in a remote location on the east side of Walton County, possibly down an old well.
God.
Police launched massive search efforts, both at the lake and in the area that the body had supposedly been moved to.
Mm-hmm.
They dug up huge amounts of land. They excavated several old wells in the area, but all the searches turned up nothing.
Gosh.
When Dylan was investigated, police found a photo of him taken the day after Justin's disappearance wearing a diamond earring just like the one Justin had been wearing the night he vanished.
Oh my God.
When questioned by police, however, Dylan claimed that he did assault Justin and he did take his earring. It was his, but he didn't kill him.
Right.
After all the searches came up empty, police had no choice but to drop the charges. Oh,
come on.
They did, however, arrest Thelma Ballew for making false claims in the case after admitting that she hadn't actually seen them dump the body somewhere else.
That's, oh my God, that's frustrating.
Yep. It's almost like she was trying to confess, but she felt like maybe she didn't have enough of the story or...
Right.
I don't know.
Well, when you first said that, I thought maybe she was telling them that they told me this, like it was a third person account or whatever, but...
No, she claims to have witnessed it.
Ugh.
To this day, no new evidence has been found, but every time remains are discovered in Lake Lanier, people immediately wonder if it could be Justin.
Well, yeah.
And if you know, like Ashley said, if you know anything about Lake Lanier... Bodies get found there a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Way more than they should.
Yeah. But we'll talk about Lake Lanier one day.
Mm-hmm.
However, police at this point in time, or at least in the most recent statements I could find, most recent articles.
Okay.
Police have a theory of what happened. Now, none of my sources told me exactly what evidence they had that led them to this theory other than just... talking to Dylan and Thelma and Martin.
Okay.
So I don't know if they have any evidence or anything they haven't told the public about, but this is the timeline that they believe.
Okay.
Police think that Justin was lured into a car, possibly by a blonde woman wearing a black dress. Now that seems very specific for a theory to me.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say.
But I couldn't find anything else about how they came up with this blonde woman as a possible person. It's not out there that I could find. The car drove south on Pleasant Hill Road to a house in Snellville near Justin's mother's house. Now, some of the sources said that Justin believed he was going to go to a house party over there.
Huh, okay.
Which may or may not be true. I don't really know. I do know, though, that according to the police's theory, when they arrive at this house, it is packed, like tons of potential witnesses.
Wow.
But none of them have ever come forward that I can find.
Unless they had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. As soon as Justin exits the car, he walks into the garage and he is attacked. Police believe that he was beaten, choked, and then shot to death. The perpetrators then stole his earring and money before driving his body to the houseboat on Lake Lanier.
Mm-hmm.
They then weighted the body down and threw it into the lake. However, a few days later, the body floated back to the surface, so the perpetrators again loaded the body up and dropped it into a well somewhere along the Apalachee River.
Which could be anywhere.
Anywhere.
Wow.
Police believe that Dylan Glass was definitely involved in Justin's disappearance. I mean, he straight up admitted to assaulting him and taking his earring.
Exactly.
But having caught him in so many lies, they have been unable to definitively tie him to the crime.
Oh my God, that's so frustrating.
I found one source that said that the owner of the house and the houseboat died in 2017, but it didn't name that person.
Oh, okay.
The houseboat and whatever car was used to transport Justin are both long gone.
Well, yeah.
So no new evidence can be taken from that. And the earring that Dylan had that was believed to have been Justin's, the police couldn't find any of Justin's DNA on it.
How possible is it to have DNA on an earring?
I have no idea.
That's what I've never actually thought of. I mean, I know it goes into your ear, but isn't that skin, like, closed up?
Well, I mean, you can have touch DNA, but...
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Wouldn't you kind of, like, maybe rub it off putting it in your own ear? I don't know how DNA investigating works. Well, I probably sound like an idiot. I'm sorry, everyone.
Well, I'm the one questioning it. I don't know. But even... I mean, he had it for 8 years before they even knew about it.
Right.
So I don't even know if his DNA would even be on it.
Stories from the three suspects, Thelma, Martin, and Dylan, have contradicted each other and varied so greatly over the years that it's been impossible for police to get the answers that they're looking for.
Oh, my God.
Which brings us to now. 14 years after Justin disappeared, there have been no charges.
No.
While police feel like they know the how, why, where, and who, they just don't have the evidence they need to do anything about it.
And they get to just walk free.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Dylan's in prison anyway.
Yeah.
If he's still in prison.
Yeah. But still. Now, did they say why they did it, or was it just a matter of wanting to steal his money, or?
They just wanted to steal his money and his diamond earring.
Lovely.
I'm very curious about this blonde woman that they mentioned,
yeah.
Who she would have been, or how they found her, but like I said, I didn't find any information about her, so maybe they saw her on one of the surveillance tapes?
Maybe it could have just been them talking. They almost seem to have had a lot to say about it, so.
I mean, maybe.
But nobody's ever going to know because nobody can keep their story straight.
Exactly. And I mean, Dylan was clearly involved, but what if he really didn't kill him? I mean, if he was actually at this party, what if it was someone else? I mean, there's just no way to know.
I don't know. For her to come forward and say that, yes, they did all of this. And then for him
about her own son, too.
Right. And then for him to go, oh, yeah, okay. So I attacked him and I stole his earring, but that's it.
Yeah.
That sounds like excuses to me.
But I hope that one day somewhere some new evidence will turn up and Justin's mother can finally get the closure that she deserves.
Yeah. Mothman, if you didn't know, is a popular humanoid cryptid in West Virginia folklore. And on November 15th, 1966, in the Ohio River town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, is where his story begins.
Wait, Mothman is as recent as 1966?
Yes, that is when it started.
I thought it would be much older than that.
No, and I thought it was an older story too, but his first...
Maybe it's because of the Jersey Devil being so old.
Yeah.
It makes me think that.
Actually, that's not a bad... It's not a bad connection. I can see that now. But no, it started in the 60s, and it kind of just progressed from there, and then it was over super quick. And it started with two couples, Roger and Linda Scarberry, and Steve and Mary Millette. And they were out for a drive late one night near an area that was called the TNT area. Which was actually just a former World War II munitions plant. But
that's a pretty clever name, though.
Right? As they were driving, they claimed to have seen a large gray creature whose eyes, quote, glowed red from their car's headlights. And I had to reread that twice because I was thinking, okay, well, maybe it just glowed red because of their brake lights, but it's their headlights.
Yeah, my first thought was like light reflecting off the eyes.
Right. Now, they described this creature to be a large flying man with 10-foot wings who was about 6 or 7 feet tall, and they said that he walked unsteadily around the corner of the old power plant that they were nearby. Obviously, they quickly drove away to get away from him, but they then...
I would too.
Right. But they then saw the creature on a hill as they went around a curve, as if it was following them. They claimed that he spread his wings out and flew straight into the air. And then he began to fly back and forth over the back of their car, like going from left to right.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I would do.
Go faster. That's what I would do.
And that's what they did. They stated that at one point the car was actually going over 100 miles an hour, but the creature was still able to keep up with them, flying over their car back and forth.
That sounds impossible.
Look, I'm just reporting the news.
Okay.
They said that they could hear its wings beating against the top of their car as they drove. They went on to do this for a little while, and then finally, as they reached the edge of Point Pleasant and back into town, the creature veered off into a nearby field and just kind of left them alone. Now, at first, they considered talking to the police, but as any normal person would think, they were afraid that they wouldn't be believed, and then they just kind of just, fine, whatever, let's just go home. And they turned around.
I mean, I kind of don't believe them.
Let's see. However, as they were driving, the creature jumped up out of the field again, flew towards them, over the top of their car, and into a field on the other side of the road. Now, it was at this point that they decided that, okay, let's just go to the police.
I mean, I guess if you need a sign.
It's Mothman. Now, at first, Deputy Millard Halstead didn't believe him. I mean, who would? Kim clearly doesn't.
Not me.
But when seeing how, like, genuinely terrified they were, he decided to, okay, fine, and go take a look at the TNT area to see what he could find. He said he didn't actually see the creatures these couples claimed to have seen, but he did mention that he had some strange static disturbances over his radio that he couldn't explain.
Probably has nothing to do with that military post that used to be there.
It was Mothman.
You're right.
How dare you?
Man, I can just see this police officer being like, gotta go look for a giant flying man in a field, BRB guys.
Gotta go find Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next day, police actually issued a statement about this sighting. And of course, the press just began printing the story.
Of course they would.
Well, yeah, of course they would. Now, they named this creature Mothman after Batman, who had just began to air on TV.
See, I was just wondering how they came up with Moth, because of all the terrifying names I could come up with for, like, a flying person,
Moth
is not one of the first ones that comes to mind.
That is the thing I swat away and scream at, but is not terrifying.
Yeah.
Also, the next day, the couples went back to this TNT area, and they claimed to have found tracks that look like, quote, two horseshoes put together. And I don't know if that means like four toes or like three toes.
Hmm.
Like two horseshoes put together.
Yeah, I don't know what that's supposed to. I would assume just side by side.
Yeah, probably.
Or maybe in a row. I don't know.
I will post pictures if I can find them. Let's do that. One of them also claimed to see something flop into a boiler when the door was kicked open. And then they said that they quickly left after that. If you go to the mothman.fandom.com, you can actually find the original police report that like shows all of this information. And it was actually kind of
cool.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to read. Now, this would only be the beginning of the sightings, as it usually goes. Over the next few days, others began to report similar sightings. There was a woman named Marcella Bennett, who is actually coined to be the second sighting of Mothman, who went to search for him the next day with two other friends and her baby. And I don't know
why. Wait, what?
Right. I don't know why you're taking a baby on a search for Mothman. But
well, they probably didn't believe he was real, but at the same time,
that's not what I
still don't think I'd take my baby.
Right. Oh, this story gets better. Hang on. As they were returning back to their car, they actually said they noticed the creature. The figure was standing behind their parked car. Now, they said that the creature rose up from the ground. It was gray and it was bigger than a man with terrible glowing red eyes. Marcella said that she screamed, she dropped her baby, and then fell on the ground in shock, but actually fell on her baby.
What?
Right. One of her friends had to pick up the baby and then finally got her up and herded everybody into a nearby home and called the police. While they were there, the creature had actually followed them onto this porch where they ran and started looking through the windows. And then, ooh, of course, it was mysteriously gone by the time police got there.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I feel like maybe she dropped her baby on accident or something happened to the baby and they're like, quick, call the police. What's our story? Mothman?
Two firemen actually claim to have seen a, quote, large bird with red eyes. And they're claiming that it's Mothman. Another local, Newell Patridge, claimed that he had also seen Mothman. And when he flashed a flashlight at the creature in a nearby field, its eyes glowed, quote, like bicycle reflectors. Now, he also blamed his television buzzing and his German Shepherd disappearing on Mothman.
Oh.
So, you know.
Oh, my gosh. All I can picture now is this guy being like, I saw it. I saw it in a field.
I can hear his voice.
And it made my TV buzz and it took my dog.
It took my dog. It totally was not, you know, the antenna on his 1960s TV at all.
Or people's habit of keeping dogs just, you know, outside with no leash or way to confine them at all.
Yeah, right. I can't get over the TV buzzing. Like maybe Mothman ate your dog, but I'm pretty sure it was probably the antenna. I lived with an antenna.
He did make the police scanner or thing, the police radio. He made it staticky, remember?
You're right. Okay, it all makes sense now. Now, a man named Kenneth Duncan actually claimed that he saw Mothman just a few days before the couple sighting. He said that he and four other men were digging a grave in Clendenin. Yep, that's right. Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia. When he saw a man-like figure in like nearby trees and that this creature even glided above their heads. Now, one, let me stop real quick and say, why do you need four men to dig one grave?
Well, I mean, it's got to be 6 feet deep and they didn't have excavators to do it, I assume.
Okay, that's fair. Cool. Now, the other men didn't see the creature, just old Kenneth.
Oh.
Yeah, it flew away. But Kenneth claims, like, he swears that the creature was brown and that it was definitely, quote, not a bird. It was humanoid. Now, he said he only came forward with the story when learning about the first couple's sighting.
So he could say me first?
Maybe. But, like, I can kind of see that, too, though.
I bet this guy's a one-upper.
He could be, but, like, if I saw something like that, I don't know if I would tell anybody. That's not true.
Yeah,
I would
for
tell
sure.
everybody. But
oh, no, yeah, I would tell everybody. But as far as, like, police or something, heck no, I'm not going to tell anybody.
Right. Exactly. And then maybe after the fact, people are starting to see this creature, too. He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw it, too, guys. But he could just be one-upping, like you said. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Now, these sightings went on for a little over a year with more than 100 residents claiming to have an encounter of some kind with Mothman. Is that mass hysteria or was Mothman just kind of hanging out in Point Pleasant? I don't know.
I would guess that at least the majority of them were probably mistaken identity.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if this is in the headlines and stuff every day, it's
absolutely
easy to...
Anything, if you're reading about UFOs all the time, you look up at the sky and see an airplane and you're first thought's going to be flying saucer, not airplane.
Exactly. Over 100 residents claim to have seen Mothman. By this time, Mothman and all of his sightings made headlines for months. And the woman who worked at the Athens Messenger, Mary Heyer, would often report sightings and odd occurrences that happened in her own column that was called Where the Waters Mingle, which is kind of
cool. That's a cool title, though.
Right? She met John Keel. And if you don't know who John Keel is, I get it. But, like, he's the guy who made Mothman famous. He wrote the book.
I didn't know who he was.
Right. Well, and like I said, I listen to a lot of this stuff and his name pops up a lot. He's into that. I'll leave it at that. But it was because of their mutual interest of Mothman that they became friends. And she actually helped John Keel with his work on Mothman. He wrote the Mothman Prophecies. I'm sure you've heard that, which became a motion picture. Yeah, and then the 90s had Richard Gere.
I don't think I've ever seen that one. I know I've never seen that one.
I think it's Richard Gere. It's a good movie. It's not scary or anything. You need to watch it. It's pretty good.
I'll look it up.
It was on November 19th, 1967, which was almost a year to the day that Mary told John Keel that she had had a, quote, terrible nightmare. Now, in her dream, she said that there were a lot of people drowning in the river and Christmas packages were floating everywhere in the water. It's like something awful is going to happen. That's what she told him.
That sounds awful.
Right. When John Keel returned to Point Pleasant that Thanksgiving, he actually found that others in the area were having dreams about a coming disaster. A lot of these dreams were about people dying in water.
Okay, that's pretty spooky.
Right? Less than a month later, on December 15th, 1967, the Silver Bridge, which is a bridge that connects Point Pleasant, West Virginia, to Ohio, collapsed into the Ohio River during rush hour traffic.
No way.
Right. 46 people died, 9 were injured, and 2 victims were never found, and it was the worst bridge accident in American history at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Naturally, there were claims of seeing Mothman at the bridge the night before, but, I mean, obviously this can't be proven. Who knows? The argument is, like, did Mothman cause the bridge to collapse, or was Mothman the omen before the bridge collapsed?
I mean, I feel like with that many people having dreams, would be more like the, hey guys, bad things are coming, just trying to give you a friendly warning here.
Here's your omen, guys.
Maybe he needed people to see him and, like, be afraid of him so that most people would know about him so he could send out the message.
He did it in such a funky way, though.
I mean, he didn't hurt anybody. He just scared him.
He just scared everybody. He was just kind of flying around. Now, he did chase those people, but maybe he was chasing them away from him.
Maybe.
I don't know. But as far as the dreams, that's the part that's weird.
That is really weird. Even if it's totally unrelated to Mothman, it's still really weird.
Right. Now, it wasn't long after that Mary Heyer, the journalist of the newspaper, began having run-ins with strange men in black. So, this is kind of, is Mothman real? Because of these men in black that suddenly showed up? Now, she claims that in January, she was working late at the newspaper, and she had been working on stories about UFOs and Mothman sightings pretty regularly. But one night, a man dressed in a black suit, he was short, he had thick glasses, and it covered his, quote, strange eyes, came into her office. The man had asked Mary how to get to Welsh. However, she started kind of giving him directions. The man would start coming closer and closer to her, like in her personal space, and it was just making her uncomfortable.
That would make me very uncomfortable.
Yeah. He then began to question her about her articles she had written and wanted to know why she felt the need to publish them. Now, if you're coming in for directions, how do you know about my articles?
Yeah.
Now, of course, because she was uncomfortable, she called a coworker into the office with her and the strange guy. And she said that, like, during this interaction, she had to take a phone call, and she noticed that the man had picked up a ballpoint pen and seemed fascinated by it, as if he had never seen one before.
Okay.
This man in black laughed, and with the pen still in his hand, he ran out of the office. He left. Super weird.
Yeah. Maybe he was just kind of, like, mentally unstable.
On drugs, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know.
But that's the whole point about Men in Black. Like, encounters, again, that's another story we can do. I can totally do that. Encounters with Men in Black, it's like they don't know how to use utensils to eat with. They don't know words, like easy words. They don't know how to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's like super weird stuff. And like the ballpoint pen, he just looked at it and went, and then left. I don't know. It's so weird.
It is very weird.
Now, a few weeks later, Mary was outside of her office when she noticed this man that she had recently spoken to. Like, it was the same guy. However, when he realized Mary had been watching him, he ran to a large black car and then sped away. Mary believed that her Men in Black encounters were an intimidation tactic to kind of scare her away from writing her articles. But I don't know if she ever had any kind of validation over that.
Or maybe it just makes you sound more credible as a writer if the Men in Black are trying to shut you down for it.
Oh, Kim. Now, here's the thing, though. Mary wasn't the only one who had these encounters with Men in Black. Several other people around the area had reportedly started seeing similarly dressed men. These strange guys would show up to houses. They would claim they're like employees of gas or water companies. They asked to read their meters. They would go downstairs into a basement for a long time. And when the homeowner went down there to check on them, they would just be gone. Who knows what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
People around typically saw them in groups of two or three. They would speak in odd ways, like they very slowed down or like in a sing-song fashion, which is ew. Some people said that they like wouldn't blink or that their skin would appear olive or transparent, which is a typical characteristic of Men in Black, olive skin. One witness said that they ate at a local diner, but yeah, didn't know how to use the utensils. The waitress had to show the man how to use a knife to eat with.
Hmm.
So, yeah, they're like super strange. Even Mary's own niece, Connie Carpenter, which I already know what you're going to say. How convenient. I know. She had her own experience with the Men in Black as well. She had originally had her own Mothman encounter in 1966, much like the other encounters at the time. She just kind of saw him flying around. And then, you know, that was it. But it wasn't long after that that she also encountered a very scary Man in Black. She was on her way to school, and she was approached by a man in a black vehicle. He waved her over, and Connie thought that maybe he was just asking for directions, and she walked over to him. However, when she got close enough, the man tried to grab her into his car and actually ripped her shirt in the process. And of course, she ran away after that.
Oh.
And then later that day, she had a note shoved under her door that read, quote, "Be careful, girl. I can get you yet."
Well, that's creepy.
That's creepy. Was it a Man in Black? I don't know. It could have just been a stalker. I don't know.
It could have just been like a serial killer.
Right. But apparently nothing else happened to her. So who knows? 13 months after the bridge collapse, the sighting and dreams just ended. Some say, like I said, Mothman was just a warning. They also say that Mothman appears as a warning to other disasters in history. I decided not to add those in here because a lot of those were super stretched.
Ah.
Like 9/11 stretched. But
yeah,
you could easily do a Google search on that and read them for yourself. It's not hard to find. Some also claim that perhaps Mothman was an extraterrestrial being himself, mainly because of the UFO and the Men in Black encounters that were happening during and after that time. But as quickly as he showed up, he disappeared, and that was the end.
I really like the idea of Mothman just being like an omen of things to come. Like that, that would make him kind of cool.
But what's the point if you don't know what's going to happen unless the dreams are part of it?
I don't know.
But nobody was able to interpret the dream, so it still happened. Nobody was able to stop it. Maybe it is just an omen, period. You don't have to know what happens. Mm-hmm. It's just an omen.
Yeah. It's not like, here's how to fix this. It's just like, hey, it's going to happen.
Yeah. I can see that.
That one's pretty cool. I do like Mothman. I don't think he existed, but I like him.
He's super cuddly, and he has red eyes. And it's kind of far out there to say, but if you've had an experience with Mothman, Please let us know.
Definitely email us if you saw a Mothman who looks nothing like a moth.
Mothmans now look like a moth.
Oh yeah, now they do. You're right.
Those are the super cuddly ones. Thanks for listening.
Like us on Facebook at True Crimes and Weird Times Podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at True Crimes Weird Times.
Email us your stories at truecrimesweirdtimes@gmail.com.
Can't wait for the next episode? Check out our Patreon for bonus episodes and more.
And if you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review.
Bye!